The Napoleonic Era, Napoleon in Exile, 1815 to 1821. Napoleon's legal issues in Britain. Well, we're well aware of the fact that the British are going to send him to St. Helena, and they're really not going to be stopped by anything. But Napoleon is going to try. And so for the next few weeks, we'll be looking at his attempts, their responses, and then his defenders, because he will find some liberal Englishmen who are willing to support him. And so it becomes a little bit more of a battle than it appears. So let's look at this initial start where we talk about Napoleon's legal issues. In an interview with Lord Keith, Napoleon said, quote, "I decided to give myself up, and I would not have done that to any other allied power, for I would have been at their mercy of the will and whims of a monarch. In submitting to England, I put myself at the mercy of a nation." So, you know, Napoleon's point of view here is Napoleon adopted the position that he gathered from his letter to the Prince Regent, the future George IV. His position, Napoleon was determined to defend against all and would provide a solid base for present and future protests. Napoleon's letter to the Prince Regent would be the charter regulating his relations with England. He was convinced that his view was correct and justified by the present situation. Unfortunately, it was a view diametrically opposite to the thinking of the British cabinet. And as far as the Prince Regent is concerned, he could really care less. This is a man who's more interested in chasing women and perfecting meat sauces. If he had been of interest and active, he might have thought a little bit differently, but that's not going to happen. So did Napoleon really hope that on reading his petition, which was drawn up in Napoleon's own hand, though inspired by his general Savary, that the Prince Regent would become an angel of mercy for him? Again, the Prince Regent was known as a libertine. I like the English reference. A lot of English references refer to him as a topper. So he does all kinds of odd stuff. And he's going to have a massive scandal during his reign. He was a man of strong views, but he never wavered in his hostility towards Napoleon. In addition, he's also a cynic, but he really doesn't care. He's after enjoyment. Anything else that gets in the way, he's not interested. There has been a quote often used, and even I have used it, where he makes a comment that when Napoleon dies or something, that he didn't even know that she was still alive. It's really not a reference towards Napoleon. It's a reference towards another individual, another lady, as a matter of fact. He just got a little bit confused. But like a good constitutional monarch, the Prince Regent simply took Napoleon's letter and handed it to his cabinet. He didn't even make a comment on it. He simply let them make all the decisions. In the letter, overlooking the joint Allied declaration of March of 1815, which made Napoleon an outlaw, Napoleon states that he comes like Themistocles, quote, to throw himself on the hospitality of the British people. Now, for those of you who are unaware of Themistocles and the reference, of course, he was the Athenian commander during the Second Persian War and the victor at the Battle of Salamis. However, he ran afoul of Athenian politics and was ultimately exiled from the country. You know, once a year, the Athenian assembly can put in the name of a person they consider dangerous, and they'll be banished for life. His critics actually manufactured discs with Themistocles' name on it to make it easier so they could dispense it. Normally, it would take a broken piece of black pottery and scratch the person's name in it. So Themistocles, after being kicked out of Athens, goes to Persia and offers his services to the Persian king, the very people that he had just defeated. And they treated him with respect and honor. So that's the reference that Napoleon is making here. Now, the essential part of Napoleon's letter to the Prince Regent reads, quote, "I come to throw myself upon the hospitality of the British people. I put myself under the protection of their laws, which I claim from your Royal Highness," end of quote. Well, first of all, number one, the I come, Napoleon supposes he's acting as a free agent. In reality, this is his only choice other than the Allies. And of course, he would rather go to America, but the British are kind of stopping that. Number two, the quote, throw myself on the hospitality of the British people. I ask for hospitality. Napoleon was convinced that it would be extended to him in accordance with a generous British tradition, taking only a view of the situation that was absolutely the most favorable to him. We're not really sure how popular he would have been with the average British citizen. Some people liked him, but with all the wars that have been going on, he certainly is not likely to win a poll of popularity. The third part, quote, here I am, and I give myself up to you of my own volition. Well, you are a worthy enemy, and I have confidence in you. Here Napoleon is putting himself in a higher plane than his enemy and inviting the British government to display the greatest of magnanimity to him. Then there is also the legal, purposely legal, argument. Quote, I put myself under the protection of English law, end of quote. In truth, Napoleon had very little idea of the extent or scope of the laws he expected to protect him. It was very presumptuous for Napoleon to seek English protection, but it was protection he claimed as if he were a British subject. Napoleon expects the Prince Regent to grant him this protection, which isn't in his power to actually give. The heart of the theory which Napoleon maintained, whether in real or pretended ignorance, was he was a prisoner. And even if the habeas corpus were not actually written in the letter to the Prince Regent, it certainly was implied. And this will be borne out by later events. So he actually lays this out. He has his points. He expects the British to do something. He's hoping for the absolute best. One would assume he's worked through what happens if he don't go this route. But it does allow him to argue the points, if you will, and to stake his claim in the public if that's an opportunity. Now, next time we'll look at habeas corpus and how it would affect him. And in reality, we're going to go back and actually review the whole history of habeas corpus in England. And it's quite interesting how it functions. Now, as far as sources, Napoleon in Exile, we've got the 50 Days of Napoleon in England by Duhamel, which is very, very detailed. This book has verbatim the accounts of the people negotiating with Napoleon and at various meetings, and they're really thorough. And those documents still exist. They have Napoleon After Waterloo by Thornton, and then Napoleon St. Helena by Martineau. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com. Ask a question, leave a comment, check out the CDs, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.